Hi, everyone, and welcome back to The Weird Years. This is a weirdly personal episode, which means there's no guest, it's just me, and I'm riffing on a topic that you guys voted for on the Instagram channel. So if you're not following, do go check it out, because we vote for these a couple of times a month and we get into the topics. Before we get into this, I would be really, really grateful that if you've liked any of the episodes, please do share them to a friend that you think would also enjoy them, or a family member, or a colleague. I really would appreciate any help in growing the podcast. And with that, let's get into today's topic.
If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years.
Okay, so this was actually quite a tight one in terms of the votes across the four topics. But we're going to talk about the validation loop. And in this, we're going to talk about why do we keep chasing validation, whether it's likes or praise or approval. We often keep chasing it, even though we kind of know better, even though we know it's probably not the best thing for us. Okay, so to start this, let's just get really clear on what we mean by validation. Validation is defined as simply being the reassurance that who we are, what we do, or how we appear is good enough. So where we get that feedback from, like, how do we decide, okay, I do feel good enough, or I don't feel good enough? It's from external sources, right? That's where the validation comes in. It's that you're looking externally to validate something, or you're looking internally. And this is the first kind of concept to really get your head around when thinking about validation, is how you seek validation is tied to motivation. The thing that motivates you, that drives you to do something, is where you often look for the validation. And so people tend to fall into one of two categories. They either have intrinsic motivation or they have extrinsic motivation. And where this works in motivation theory, intrinsic motivation means that you're doing something for its own satisfaction or for your own satisfaction. You're doing it for the joy of doing the thing. Whereas external motivation means you're doing it for external rewards, approval, or avoidance of punishment. And you can probably really quickly, like, you'll probably feel like you're one of these two people. Maybe you're somewhere in the middle. And if you're not really sure, like, where you sit on those two things, then maybe ask yourself, as an example, what are you doing at the weekend? Or what did you do at the weekend? Pick something. And is it something that you did because it's something that you wanted to do? The motivation came from yourself to go and do it. Or were you doing something that you really didn't want to do, but the motivation was for other people? Maybe you went and did it because you knew that a friend really wanted you to, or perhaps you went to do something because you knew that if you did this, you would do better in your career. Like, just working out where that motivation came from. Is it because you want to prove something to something, or is it because you wanted to do it? So just to solidify that again, you're either intrinsically motivated, which is that you're driven to do something because you want to do that thing, or you're extrinsically motivated, which is you're driven to do something because of the noise and the pressure of outside factors, really, really simply put. And when you're listening to this, obviously there's grey areas, right? There's times where you do something you don't really want to do, but you know that it's good for other people. We're not talking about that. There is a level of validation that people need to be a part of the tribe, to be a part of the group. And we're talking about the more extreme sides of this, which is where I think a lot of people listening will be struggling. In fact, I know a lot of people listening will be struggling with this because it was the most voted topic. But the good news on this is that it's not a personality trait. It's not like when you're an extrovert or an introvert. It's actually a learned behavior. So you're not inherently extrinsically or intrinsically motivated. You learn that through the way that you grow up and the way that you interact with the world, or that the way that the world interacts with you. And this need for external validation, it's not because there's something wrong with you. It's often learned as a coping mechanism. And it's done through reinforcement, right? It's been done through repeated behavior. And often when you're really, really young, it's outside of your control. It's something that's almost been taught to you. And unsurprisingly, like so many things that we talk about on this podcast, it comes back to attachment theory. If you haven't looked into attachment theory, it is honestly, I think, one of the biggest unlocks of understanding yourself in your 20s and your 30s. There's an amazing book that's called Attached, and it's so worth reading. And it's built on this idea that you have a certain style of attachment, and it's formed literally from your earliest years. And actually, by the time you get to 10 or around that age, it's quite solidified. Now, this doesn't mean it doesn't change. It absolutely can change, but it is quite a strong pattern that you've learned. So you've got lots of different types of attachment styles. There's four key ones. So you have securely attached. This is the way that your caregivers cared for you as a child was very secure. It was very consistent. You knew what you were going to get. And it's that kind of unconditional style love. And then you have anxious attachment. I used to be the queen of anxiously attached, like so bad. And I think for me, it all kind of started around my parents' divorce, which is a whole other story. But anxiously attached people are always testing boundaries. They've usually had some sort of disruption in their childhood. Maybe they had a caregiver who was unwell, so was often missing, or perhaps they had a caregiver who, you know, the parents got divorced and somebody disappeared. So there was this kind of lack of consistent interaction or lack of consistent validation, which makes you kind of protest and act out, and you test the boundaries to make sure that someone comes back. That's why it's called anxious, is that you're always kind of waiting for someone to leave and sort of testing to see what they do. And then you have avoidant attachment. And avoidant attachment is characterized as someone who's very uncomfortable with closeness, who doesn't share easily, who doesn't enjoy that feeling of being close to someone. They're almost the polar opposite of the anxious. Whereas the anxious attachment, they're yearning, yearning, yearning for that connection. The avoidant, they feel quite uncomfortable when someone does project closeness or comfort onto them. And this, again, is a learned behaviour. It often comes from having a caregiver who either is emotionally unavailable, someone who's very kind of like blank themselves, that the child acts and they don't get much response. It can be from a caregiver who's quite critical, that actually they nitpick and the child learns to avoid that closeness because it doesn't feel safe. It can also be that actually there's like a level of abusiveness, that it, again, the child learns to kind of self-soothe because they know that no one is coming to make them feel secure. So they avoid. And then the last one is disorganized attachment, which is almost like a mixture of a little bit of the avoidant and a little bit of the anxious. It's this kind of behavior where they push and pull. They really want closeness, but when they get it, they reject it and find it very uncomfortable. And that, again, is coming from childhood. It's from a caregiver who might be very up and down in themselves. Someone who's not very stable or regulated can create this kind of child who almost doesn't know if they're coming or going. Okay, so that was actually a little bit of a detour that I hadn't planned to go down. But the reason that it's important is because according to attachment theory, through these early relationships and these patterns that we just talked about, you probably, you know, you fall into one of these four categories, right? There's an association with approval. There's an association with belonging and safety. When we behave in a way that our parents like, we feel safe, we feel comfortable. When we behave in a way that our parents don't like, we don't feel safe and comfortable. So if you think about that from a child, if you know that whatever you do, whatever behavior you have, your parent is consistent, they are there, they are showing up. And actually you can't really, you might piss them off, but there's not really much you can do to make them reject you. Then you start to build this view of yourself that there's something intrinsically correct about you, that the person you are, the things you do, and the way you move through the world are good. You build this internal intrinsic motivation. You're not acting a certain way for their approval because you know that regardless of how you act, their approval is going to be there. If you have a caregiver, however, which has pushed you into an anxious, avoidant, or a disorganized attachment style, that also affects your motivation because you have been sense-checking yourself, who you are, what you do, how you show up in the world against how they react. Your motivation has been built into their behavior because you're trying to make sure you keep this consistent, safe love and caregiving, but you're not always getting that. So what you get is an external motivation because the things that you do are really reliant on how that person reacts. And that's how we've been trained into approval seeking behavior. So I really want at this point in this chat for you guys to just realize that again, this is in no way like someone's fault or your fault. Let's put it that way. It's not your fault if you've been taught that you need to act a certain way and you therefore seek that approval and that validation from other people. That is not something that you should feel guilty about. It's not because you're a fundamentally flawed person. It's because the environment that you grew up in. And look, this isn't talking about like really intense abuse or anything like that. It could just be that you have a parent who's a bit emotionally cold and it can teach you these patterns. And then before you know it, you're a validation seeking person. And then before you know it, you've built these approval seeking patterns. It is a part of your behavior. It's now how you start to move through the world. And maybe this isn't even your parents. It's not always a case that this approval-seeking behaviour comes from your parents. It can also come later in life. It could be from a sibling that you always really want to impress and they never really want you to hang out with them because they don't think you're cool enough and you're hyper aware of that. So you're seeking validation from them. It could be from a school teacher or an environment. If you went to like a really strict, kind of very difficult school where it was all about grades and comparing people, you might have picked up some external validation from there, like the need to get that external validation from that environment. It could even be from like a sports coach. Think back to what you did as a kid. Like maybe, I mean, I did gymnastics. I'll be honest, there was not any validation seeking behavior there for me because I wasn't very good at it. But for some people, they would have gone into that space and felt like they were only good enough if their coach said like, oh, you've done a really good job. They weren't doing it necessarily for the joy of the activity. They were doing it because they needed that approval seeking and that validation. So it can come from lots of different places. And as a personal share, because we love to do this, I was thinking about validation for myself and I really was sitting for a long time and being like, I feel like I have quite strong intrinsic validation. I think most of the things that I do for myself. I'm not particularly fussed by other people's opinions on the whole. And I think that goes back to my attachment style. I used to be a very, very anxiously attached person. And I think over the last 10 years, I've moved into this secure attachment, which a massive credit to my husband. So I think that's a massive part of it, is that when I reached out for validation, I always got it from him. But also that I always felt consistently cared for and loved regardless kind of my, you know, behavior. Not that I was doing bad behavior, but you know what I mean? I didn't feel judged. I didn't feel criticized. And that really moved me towards a secure attachment. So I was thinking about this and being like, where do I seek validation now? Or where have I sought validation? Seeked? Is that a past tense? I'm not sure. In the past. And for me, it was always around men. Like when I was younger, I was very affected by whether men and partners thought I was attractive or thought I was special. That's where my like need for validation used to come from. And it's so interesting because it literally ties back exactly to what we were just talking about of like early childhood experiences, because I think it was the idea of, you know, my dad quite, abruptly left the family. And I think that was where probably my need for external validation and very much tied to male figures came from. So you might be able to trace back, like when you think about, maybe you're sitting here and thinking, actually, my validation all comes from work. Like I really need validating at work. I really need my boss to tell me like often how well I'm doing. I need the promotions. I need the whatever reward system your work kind of puts into place. And maybe you can trace that back. Maybe it is your school. Maybe it is your gymnastics coach. Maybe it's something else. But you might be able to find that kind of red thread of where this maybe comes from. And there's good and there's bad news in this, right? Because it is not a personality trait. So we can shift ourselves from intrinsic to extrinsic validation. And why do we want to do this? Because ultimately, if we're always kind of paying attention to other people, doing things because of what other people want, you can't actually control other people. The only thing you can control is your own behavior. And if you are always looking to external validation, you're putting all of this like faith and motivation and so much of yourself in things that you really can't control. There's actually a quote that I love. How does it go? It goes, if you only play for the applause, you put your happiness in the hands of the audience. So if you only play for the applause, you put your happiness in the hands of the audience. So you are putting the thing that motivates you, that makes you feel good, completely outside of your control. Like you cannot control how someone will react to something that you do all of the time. You just can't. Obviously, behaviors have consequences. I understand that. But you cannot always be looking for external validation, because ultimately it just makes you feel shit. And in this time of life, there will still be so many places for us to find validation and comparison. I think some of the massive ones are, you know, things like life stage, that 30s come with so many visible comparison points like marriage, career, children, big house, like exciting business. There's so many moments for us to look externally and to compare and to want that validation that somebody else has. Like if you're dating in these years, that is a constant kind of trigger for your motivation type, whether it's intrinsic or extrinsic, because there's so many opportunities to be either validated or rejected. And I think that can create a really vicious cycle of doing things or going after people, not even because you actually like them. It's not because it's intrinsic to you and you want to do it and it's your drive. It's because their behavior makes you want to win them over. Because you've got that external validation, you're seeking, you look for places to be validated or rejected. So that happens a lot in dating. So you can, or maybe you're feeling like you're actually in that spiral. There's also this kind of culture of visibility, right? Of posting on social media. Like, social media is a fucking massive one for triggering your validation system. Every time you post, right, you get immediate feedback. And it's even proven, like in neuroscience, that you get a dopamine hit. So dopamine being the chemical that makes you feel happiness. When you see likes, when you see comments, you get a tiny little dopamine hit. So it's reinforcing the thing that you did was good from an external perspective. Versus if you're someone, and this is not me, we all know, let's say you're someone who has a closed Instagram and maybe you post like the things that you really love, but you couldn't give a shit whether anyone likes it or not. That's probably more of a form of intrinsic motivation because you're not doing it for the other people's approval. But my point in all of this is that there are a million points in our 30s where we will be put into a position where the validation is triggered, and you will probably see your behavior and start to notice whether you're intrinsic or extrinsically motivated. And why does this matter so much? Why is it such a big cost? I just want to dwell on that again for a minute. It's because you can lose authenticity. You can lose your ambition. You can lose your drive in this world of extrinsic motivation. Because as we said, you can't impact that other person's behavior, right? But you might start to be impacted by the response. So you might find that you get loads of validation. If you're externally motivated, you get loads of validation from your work. And actually, this part of your work that you never really liked, you kind of thought it was a bit shit, you didn't really want to do it. But you're getting so much validation there that people are going like, oh, you're great at this. You're so good at this. Like, this is going so well. If you do this, you could be even better. And you might find yourself being drawn to something, not because you really want to do it, but because that validation is there. The same with the partner, which I already mentioned. You might find yourself drawn to someone who actually you're not that fussed about, who's not an amazing match for you, but because they are giving you that validation. And it might be all the way through to social media things. Like, maybe you go after, I don't know, cosmetic procedures or something there that you maybe wouldn't do if you weren't so motivated by trying to fulfill these other people's wants. So ultimately, you miss out in a level of authenticity and a level of control of your life. I mean, it kind of goes back to that quote, right? If you only play for the applause, you put your happiness in the hands of the audience. And that's just not where we want to be. But as I said, the great news of this is that in psychology, it's not classed as a personality trait. It is something that can change. And you can build a new pattern of how you interact with the world. And you can change where you find your validation. And I really think, you know, I did some research into this. Again, got my little psychology hat on again, and was looking at the research-driven approaches to how do you start to change that? How can you shift that behavior and change those patterns? And because it is a behavior pattern, it's a learned coping mechanism, you can change it in almost exactly the same way that you learned it, by evidence and reaction. Those are the things that we're going to look at. How do you change the way you react and change the way you see evidence of the fact that who you are, what you do, and the way you move through the world is good enough or not? So we're going to finish this up with four or five, I think it's four or five, I'm not sure, I've lost track of my own brain, but different ways that you can start to shift from being very externally motivated and externally needing external validation to being more intrinsically motivated and not needing that external validation, being able to quiet the noise of other people and listen to yourself. Okay, so the first one is around awareness. This is always the case, right? It's always that the first way of changing anything is by acknowledging it and being aware. So I gave that example of thinking about what you did last weekend, but ask yourself when you're doing something, am I doing this for me or am I doing it for the show? Am I doing this because I really love this outfit, or am I doing it because I want that person to think that I'm cool? Am I doing this because I want to spend time with this person, or am I doing it because spending time with this person makes me feel like I am good enough? Ask yourself, does this behavior, this value, really align with me, or does it align with what I want people to think about me or what they think in general? Because we might think that we want praise, but actually a lot of the time it just builds those unhealthy patterns again. And I think the other thing on awareness is also, and this maybe is going to sound counterintuitive because of what I just said, you want to look inward and you want to start to look at your behavior and be like, why am I doing this thing? Like, why am I doing this? Is it because I want to do it, or is it because I feel like I should be doing it? When you use the word should, that's a really good trigger to start to think, okay, where's the motivation? Where's the validation coming from? If it's I should do this, often you might find that you're being led by something other than yourself. But I also think you need to decenter yourself a little bit in this. Often people who seek a lot of external validation are very wrapped up in their view of themselves and what's going on in their own head. And they presume that other people are thinking about them much more than they are. I think there's such a beautiful, freeing mindset to realize that literally no one is thinking about you as much as you are thinking about yourself. That's just the human condition. Like that thing that you said at a party 2 weeks ago, or even that thing that someone said to you at a party 2 weeks ago, it probably wasn't as deep as you thought it was. And that kind of rumination, noticing when you do that, I think can be a really good chance to notice whether you're internally or externally motivated. It's also why I think cringe is just the lamest emotion. If someone says that somebody else is cringe, I'm always like, oh, that turns me off on that person, because I think someone doing something that they love is never cringe. And actually the cringe thing is like judging other people for doing that. I think that if you're motivated internally to the point that, let's say you, I can't even think of what an example would be. Let's say you start a podcast. Okay. A lot of people could think, oh, that's really cringe that she started a podcast. Now I could take that on and it would change how I create the podcast, because I would constantly be looking outwards at like, what does this person think? What does this person think? And it might stop me from doing things. Whereas if you just accept that I'm not going to take my validation from other places, I'm going to take it from myself. I enjoy doing this. It's something that I think is fun. If people listen, fantastic. But you change where the validation comes from. It's really satisfying. So again, that was a tangent, sorry. But cringe is dead. And let's just think about awareness. Let's start with awareness. You might be listening to this being like, yes, I know which one I am. If you're not, start with awareness. And if you are, then start to see what are the triggers that push you to act on that validation seeking. Well, that was a very long-winded number one, wasn't it? I'm going to try and get through them a little bit quicker than that, partly because I'm so fucking out of breath now with this pregnancy. I've really got to this point where when I'm presenting on a call or when I'm recording in a podcast, I'm honestly just struggling to breathe, which is quite terrifying considering I have 3 months left. Anyway, a detour. Okay, number two is around building autonomy. So this comes from self-determination theory, and that believes that internal validation can be built by autonomy. What do we mean by autonomy? It's being in control of your decisions, your behavior that you move through the world with. So you have autonomy over this. You can choose to do it or you can choose not to do it. How do we build that? Well, the way that they talk about applying this is about giving yourself choice in how you do things, not just what you do. So any opportunity where you can listen to that, I should do this, think about the autonomy of, do I want to do this? And how can I build as much choice into doing this as possible? Let's say you have to go to an event for work. You don't want to, right? But you can't just be like, sorry, guys, I'm following my intrinsic motivation. I actually don't want to be here. It's probably not going to fly very well. But how can you build more autonomy into it? Can you go and meet someone at the event that you really wanted to speak to rather than that's necessarily like on your list for the day? Or can you build something into that day which gives you autonomy and gives you choice? Maybe you go to like a nice coffee shop nearby. How can you build more autonomy and choice into your life? That is a key way that you start to shift towards internal intrinsic validation. Number three is such a good one. Oh, it can be hard to practice, but it's such a good one, which is around shifting goals from performance to mastery. So this is a growth mindset theory. You've heard of growth mindset. It's this idea that people often even think that you have a fixed mindset, which is like, I can never be smarter. I am who I am. This is all I know. Or you have a growth mindset, which is like, I kind of feel anything is possible if I put my mind to it and I focused on it and I learn. So it's linked back to that. But it's this idea that if you have performance-based goals, so doing something to prove your worth, a performance-based goal might be, I am going to, let's take it back to when we were kids, I am going to run really fast this race because my parents said, if I did, they're going to buy me this toy. Some people do parent like that. It's not the best way to build intrinsic motivation or validation, but here we go. That's an example. That's a performance-based goal. Okay, let's think about one for our lives now. It could be, I'm going to go to the gym 4 times a week because by this date on my holiday in Ibiza, I want to look really skinny so that people think I look hot. Okay. You are putting your behavior based on the other person's judgment, right? It's a performance-based goal. You're doing it to prove worth to somebody else. Versus mastery goals is doing something to improve skill or understanding. And that helps build intrinsic drive. So let's take that back to the example of when we were a kid. Rather than running really fast because you want to get this toy at the end, it might be that you're running really fast because you're interested in how you can push your body to be the fastest that you can be. You're not even looking at other people's times. You're just looking at your own time of, I've run faster than I did previously. In the example of going to the gym, it might be, I want to go to the gym because I want to learn how to do like a squat, which is really perfect form. Now, you're obviously going to get closer to your body goals if you're doing squats, sure, depending on what your body goal is. But you are changing the way that you think about it. So it's no longer about like, I'm doing this to get to the body for my trip to Ibiza where everyone's going to look at me or not look at me. It's, I am going to do this because I want to feel what it feels like and be able to do a really good squat and know that that's something that I've mastered, that I've learned. I have to push myself on this one all the fucking time. I think especially having this podcast, there are so many little digital moments to be pushed towards external validation. There's the likes on the post. There's how many people listen. There's how many people share it. There's how quickly we're growing over time. There's all of these things, which are very performance-based goals. And it's very easy to almost be swayed into going after a certain strategy because it might drive growth. But ultimately, it should be about mastery. Like, yes, I could probably get more followers if I went and spoke to like really questionable people who have ginormous followings, for example. Or maybe if I did more divisive topics, I would get more followers, but I wouldn't necessarily be building the podcast that I want to build, right? And I wouldn't be mastering what is best for the audience. I would be mastering what is best to just get that validation for myself. So this is a really, really tricky one, but it's something that you can practice, which is in your mind, reframe the reason that you're doing something. Even when you write down, I mean, I don't know if you guys do this, if you do like January goals or if you do monthly goals or whatever you're doing, just try even writing it in a slightly different way of why you want to achieve something. Don't always, you know, write what the thing is necessarily. It might be part of your process, but focus on the mastery or learning something or improving a skill or understanding, and that will help build your intrinsic drive. When we start measuring progress instead of praise, we take some of the joy back, right? Because going back to that quote, we're not putting the power in the hands of the audience. We're not doing it for that anymore. We're doing it for the love of doing the play. I don't know if that made sense. I hope it did. Number four, and this is actually the last one, there was four, not five, is reducing external feedback exposure. So we talked about the power of social media. It will truly fucking destroy your brain if you allow it because of those tiny little dopamine hits. You really have to be conscious of how we reduce external exposure and that feedback loop. And it's not just social media, right? There's lots of other things. You might find yourself that maybe you have an app and every time you do a certain thing, you do it in the app. Duolingo is a good one for this. And look, absolutely, this stuff can help build habits, but it can also help build external validation, right? Let's say you have an app which is with your friends and it is saying, every time I go to the gym, I put it in this app and all my friends can see. Yes, there's a level of accountability. I understand that. But if you start doing it solely because you want to put it in the app so that your friends see it, then you're creating that need for external validation. The other time that you might see it is if you're someone who needs a lot of external validation, you might ask people things a lot of the time. What do you think of my hair? Do you like this dress? What do you think I should do with my job? Like, what do you think this text means from this person? You might be often seeking that kind of external validation. And listen, I'm absolutely not saying you shouldn't ask for opinions and you should just drive forward and be pig-headed in everything you do. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that if you struggle to make any decisions without somebody else validating you, then that's going to be a really hard way to move through the world. So how can you apply this approach to reducing feedback exposure? One would be, do not have your notifications turned on social media. It is wild behavior for anyone to be doing that in 2025. You do not need a pop-up saying, Bill, who used to work in the office next door 10 years ago, liked your bikini picture. You do not need that. I'm telling you, as a human being directly to you, you do not need that. You do not need those constant little ping, 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 ping dopamine coming into your phone. Just fucking turn it off. Build a boundary with it. You can also start creating more and sharing less. And this sounds probably quite hypocritical from me, but it's true. It's backed by psychology. You need to learn to do things for your own joy. And I see this with creative people all the time. And I'm also very guilty of it at times, is that we get a hobby and we have to monetize the hobby and we have to share the hobby because we need the validation of the hobby being productive or being like something that people give us a pat on the back for. Let's say you love to take photographs. You can actually take photographs and love them and not put them out there for the world to see. That might be a way that if you're struggling with this external validation need, it might be a way that you start to just play around with that dynamic and be like, actually, I'm going to make some stuff and I'm not going to share it because I've realized that when I do share it and I don't get any likes, it actually makes me feel quite shit about the photos and I really liked them before, but now I've shared them and no one likes them, makes me feel bad about it. Then just cut that behavior. Just share a little bit less, create a little bit more. And what we're trying to do with this by asking people's opinions less on things that we actually don't need their opinions on. Ask your friends' opinions on, you know, important things. Ask your colleagues' opinions on important things. Do not just give away willy-nilly your need for validation because we're just creating that feedback loop, right? If we starve the loop, the craving fades. I want to say that again. If you starve the loop, the craving will fade. If you stop putting it out there, giving opportunities to seek external validation, if you stop doing that, you're starving it and you start to not need it. And that's biochemically, that's psychologically, that starts to shift you more towards a healthier pattern of where your validation comes from. Okay, and I'm going to wrap this up. Very few people will ever get to the point of, let's call it enlightenment. Maybe it's enlightenment, maybe it's being stubborn. There's probably many different versions of this. But very few people will get to the point where they don't need any external validation whatsoever. And that's because ultimately we do live in a tribe, right? We are tribal creatures. We are smooth dolphin monkey creatures that have evolved. Not that we've evolved from dolphins. Don't come at me thinking that I think that we evolved from dolphins. I don't think that. I'm just saying that we are the smooth dolphin equivalent of a monkey. Anyway, we have evolved to be checking to a degree to the people around us because it's what keeps us safe. It's what allows us to cohabit together in great ways. So it's not that you can never take joy in someone telling you that you've done something good. That feels good. Of course it feels good. That's fine. But if you start to just be driven by that, that's when I'm saying we should think about these things and just be conscious of it. Be kind to yourself. There's obviously a reason that people voted for this episode. There's obviously a reason that you've clicked on it. So what can you do to just make small nudges towards being a little bit more driven by what you want to do? And as always, be kind to yourself around this. Do not get in your head that you're some awful validation-seeking person, because as we talked about at the beginning, it is 100% not your fault. This is a pattern which was taught to you, and it's not intrinsic to who you are, and also you can change it if that's something you want to do.
If you feel like you would be a little bit happier, less impacted by the opinions of other people around you and needing that validation less, then just try out some of those 5 things that I put in the episode. I'm also going to chuck them into an Instagram post, so they're really easy to find. But that is everything from me. I really hope you've enjoyed this episode, and let's speak again soon. Bye.